From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today on the show, how Wisconsin's open carry laws creates complications for both protesters and law enforcement. Then, Wauwatosa Mayor Dennis McBride talks about the ongoing protests in the city.
The protests in Wauwatosa and across the country started soon thereafter, and it's been almost a daily thing in Wauwatosa. People have a constitutional right to protest, and we support that right.
Plus, musician Andy Heath talks about how she's handled the pandemic, which put her career on hold.
I tried to look at it practically, but it was definitely a bummer to watch. I mean, pretty much the entire summer, all of the shows that we had scheduled just kind of dry up.
Lake Effect Weekend is next, but first the news. This is Lake Effect Weekend from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse is facing charges for shooting and killing two people and injuring another during protests in Kenosha. Rittenhouse is from Illinois and was openly carrying a weapon at a protest in Kenosha Tuesday night over the shooting of Jacob Blake by Kenosha police. Rittenhouse was one of several people carrying firearms at the protest. Openly carrying firearms is not illegal in Wisconsin, but doing so during a protest after a curfew is put in place brings up a lot of questions and legal concerns. Tony Cotton is an attorney in Waukesha, and he joins me now to help break down what is legal when it comes to open carry laws in Wisconsin, when police can intervene, and how this issue intersects with people's First Amendment right to protest. Tony Cotton, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So given all of the events in Kenosha as of late, let's start with the basics. What is Wisconsin's law when it comes to carrying weapons?
Wisconsin is an open carry state. So under Wisconsin law, people who are 18 years or older are permitted to carry weapons in a visible fashion. Wisconsin also has what are called CCW laws, concealed carry laws, which are separate and distinct from the open carry laws. A concealed carry permit can be obtained by someone, and if a person has a CCW permit, then they can carry a firearm in a concealed manner.
And to open carry, you also need to be at least 18 years old, correct?
Correct. You have to be at least 18 years old, and of course, you can't have any of the other prohibitions that would prevent you from possessing a firearm, like being a felon or somebody who's convicted of domestic violence and things like that.
Right. And we will note that Kyle Rittenhouse is 17 years old. He was recently arrested in the killing of two people gunned down during the third night of protests in Kenosha. So when it comes to cities or counties regarding open carry, it's a statewide thing. And cities and counties cannot make laws on gun possession that would then conflict with the state's open carry laws. So do things like declarations of curfews, for example, like we've seen with protest, or state emergency orders overrule or have any impact on this?
They don't overrule the state open carry rules as they exist or laws as they exist. Does it have an impact? I suppose it could have an impact if individuals respect the curfew order that's in place. But if people don't respect that order and they're outside, that person may be violating the curfew order. But if that person has a open possession of a firearm, that person would not be running into any conflict with state law for possessing that firearm, you know, just because there's a curfew order in place.
Okay. So with events in Kenosha, it has been confirmed that the shooter from Tuesday night traveled from Illinois. So how does that factor into things?
I'm not licensed in Illinois, and I really don't know Illinois laws, but as I understand it, there's probably a few problems on his end. One, of course, is just simply being 17 years old and walking the streets in Wisconsin with an open carry firearm. That in and of itself is illegal. Crossing state lines. I don't know how he transported that gun. I'm going to assume it was transported in a concealed way. It'd be hard not to. If that gun was transported in a concealed way, then he would be violating the CCW, the concealed carry laws in Wisconsin when he came here. There may also, frankly, be federal laws that he's violated because he crossed state lines with a gun that definitely was manufactured in interstate commerce. So there's those aspects of liability that I suppose are, frankly, probably the least of his concerns, given the murder charges they brought against him, though.
Right. And in Illinois, open carrying a handgun on your person or in a vehicle with or without a license is also illegal. So that adds a lot of factors complicating things.
Right. I mean, he's got a whole host of problems, but I think those things probably pale in comparison to the homicide charge.
When people are open carrying during protests, whether they're with the protesters or anti-protesters, what, if anything, could police do to intervene when someone is openly carrying a weapon? And we'll stick to Wisconsin here, obviously. You know, especially during circumstances such as this, when there are protests and curfews and things are heightened and you have someone open carrying, even though it is legal, you know, when can police step in?
Well, I've been a lawyer for 15 or 16 years now, and I remember when I first started practicing, the question was always, it was sort of an unresolved question in Wisconsin. Candidly, it seemed very clear that you could open carry, but it really was an unresolved issue. There was, people would not do it. People certainly, if they did do it, were being arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. It was happening all the time. And 2010 or so, somewhere around there, 2011, they had that changed. And the rule basically became, or the law basically became, that if you possessed a firearm and were open carrying and not doing anything else, it wasn't a problem. What the police could choose to do in these circumstances is, when people are part of a group, if the group is peaceful, protesting peacefully, not looting businesses, not burning things to the ground, if people are just walking around with firearms, it would be really hard for law enforcement to justify an arrest of somebody who is simply just walking around with a firearm. You know, but that's not what we were seeing in Kenosha. What we were seeing is a very high level of violence, at least as I understand it, by some of the protesters. And if those people are affiliated with groups or individuals who are open carrying, it wouldn't surprise me to see law enforcement arrest those people for disorderly conduct while armed.
Right. Because of that law passed in 2011, police have to prove that there is a criminal or malicious intent behind it, right?
Right. So, you know, people who are, you know, if the group, so to speak, I'll just say the group, you know, if a group of people are looting or burning a building to the ground, and somebody that is even tangentially connected to that group has a gun in an open carry state, law enforcement certainly could arrest that person. Whether the charges would hold up, that's a totally different story. And of course, there's also the practical considerations that I think every law enforcement agency is thinking about right now, which is, does the, you know, it's a very low bar to arrest someone under Wisconsin law. Officers only need probable cause to believe that a person has committed a crime. So it's a low bar. But the practical consideration by law enforcement is, if we do arrest people, you know, whether the charge is strong or weak, might we be throwing more fuel on the fire, so to speak?
You know, I imagine tensions are high and you add someone open carrying, no matter how uncomfortable people may be, do you think, because of factors such as this, that things really need to escalate before police would weigh that risk and step in?
Yeah, well, we saw, unfortunately, in Kenosha, I think that, I don't know the full story, and the full story matters in every circumstance, but you know, clearly the police were not enforcing that curfew order, and it seems that one or more people were walking around with firearms, and those individuals were not being arrested, either for disorderly conduct while armed or for violating a curfew order that was lawfully passed.
So the National Guard has been sent to Kenosha, and the Guard is used to support local authorities in circumstances like ongoing protests. So when it comes to the National Guard, can they take any action when it comes to apprehending or making arrests in these situations, whether protests or open carry?
I don't believe the National Guard has arrest authority. At least I've handled federal cases and state cases since I was since I graduated law school, and I've never had a case where the National Guard has arrested somebody. We don't really have citizen arrest concepts in Wisconsin. You know, you hear about that phrase in other states. We don't really have a history of citizens conducting arrests, and I don't think the National Guard really is going to play that role. I think they're going to be more in a defensive role of protecting property.
So we have seen people openly carry during protests before. It's not just been here in Kenosha. It's also happened in Milwaukee. So if there is a protester or observer, you know, who sees someone open carrying and they're made uncomfortable by that, is there really anything they can do?
I think the best thing they can do is just get away, because I think people who are joining protest movements and are openly carrying firearms are, I don't see that as a tactic that's going to reduce tension. And you know, then from a legal perspective, you also have the concerns of party to a crime liability. So if you are near somebody who's possessing a firearm and you're part of that group and you're part of the protest, might an aggressive prosecutor or a police officer, if they did choose to conduct mass arrests, might they argue that you're a party to that crime in some fashion? Is also a concern that people should be mindful of. I live in Wauwatosa, right on the border of Milwaukee. And so we see protests all the time, and there's protests that literally, one of my offices is on North Avenue in Milwaukee. We've had hundreds of people protesting up and down North Avenue, shutting down traffic. A few weeks ago, I marched with a group just as a sign of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. And when I was marching down the street, one of the protesters was open carrying a huge assault rifle across the front of his body. It was something that I didn't even really see it until just the guy walked past me. And it was, you know, I'm not very familiar with guns outside of my professional requirements that I have to know about them to defend certain cases, but it was surprising to see. And what the Wauwatosa police had decided to do was allow those activities to occur. The Wauwatosa police were not shutting down these protests, even though the people were acting, I think, flagrantly unlawfully at the point that I left the protest, when they started shutting down North Avenue, setting up camp in the middle of the road so traffic couldn't get through. And Wauwatosa made the decision, the police department made the decision, that we're not going to throw fuel on that fire. We're not going to arrest somebody who is carrying a firearm and committing a criminal act by shutting down a major thoroughfare in the community. And so, you know, I think that's each police agency is looking at it and trying to decide how they should handle things.
And how did you feel being close to someone open carrying?
That's right around the time I got away from the group, because it just made things feel way too militaristic, the tension level just rose considerably when people started seeing that. And I'm sure the guy wasn't a felon. I mean, he's doing it so brazenly. I'm sure he's lawfully possessing a firearm, but any person with a basic level of common sense can see how quickly something like that can escalate. And the last thing I wanted to do is be anywhere near somebody marching down North Avenue with a rifle strung over his chest.
Right. And we have seen things obviously escalate, is one word for it, in Kenosha over just the past few days.
Yeah. And law enforcement's under the gun right now, as we're seeing, because the whole reason Kenosha is the epicenter is because of the shooting that took place, you know, a few days prior to that. So law enforcement's got tough decisions to make here. Do they do what they probably want to do and think they should do, which is arrest people who are flagrantly violating curfew orders and out there causing havoc? I think every cop in that force, every officer in that force probably wants to arrest people and bring law and order to the community. But at the same time, will that escalate things further? And now I think, unfortunately, what we saw with this 17-year-old who committed this shooting, I don't think anybody expected that something like that was going to happen.
When it came to not just the 17-year-old, there were other people open carrying in Kenosha as well. And that's one thing. But where does the law stand when someone brandishes and uses open carry with the intent to protect property, even when it's not their property directly? So this shooter, he crossed state lines. Other people have traveled to Kenosha to take part in protests or to open carry and claim that they're there to protect property. But obviously, it's not their businesses. They don't live there. Where do things stand legally when it comes to this?
It's really, that's such a multifaceted question. I mean, so I think the best way to answer that is to say that Wisconsin law certainly permits a person to brandish a firearm to defend their property. So somebody starts coming to your business and they're going to torch it, or they're going to enter and they don't have permission to do so. You can certainly brandish a firearm to repel that behavior. You can use a firearm if you are suffering the risk of death or great bodily harm as a result of some aggressive action towards you. Defending property is a really tough call, though. I actually, about 15 minutes before our interview, I just fielded a call from a business owner in Kenosha who was asking me that exact question. Can I, myself and my friends or colleagues, can we use firearms or brandish firearms to defend property? And while you might lawfully be able to display a firearm in order to repel an attack against your property, again, that can escalate really quickly. And we're in a climate right now where it would not surprise me if the Kenosha District Attorney's Office, which has a reputation of being an aggressive prosecutor office, it would not surprise me if their position became, we're just going to prosecute anybody who discharges a firearm in these circumstances. We're going to start arresting everybody. We'll figure it out later, or we'll let a jury figure it out. Are you defending property or defending your life or fearful for your safety, or does the Castle Doctrine apply? I think their attitude is going to be, we need to stamp this down. We need to arrest anybody who's using firearms in any way. And I think that, you know, they'll let it get sorted out down the road. So the advice really would be to anybody, honestly, the best advice from a criminal defense perspective, trying to avoid criminal charges, is get out of there. You know, lock yourself in your home. Property is property. Unfortunately, as awful as it is to see your business destroyed, you're better off being in your home. And if you want to possess a firearm, possess it in your home. And if somebody tries to come into your home, the Castle Doctrine allows you to shoot them if you want to.
When it comes to these outside groups coming, saying they're protecting other people's properties and businesses in Kenosha, while they think they're doing the right thing, does that hold any legal ground?
That's a hard question to answer. I really don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I think it's a harder argument to make to a jury down the road or a prosecutor's office that I came from another county to defend some other person's property. You're going to generate less sympathy from those who make decisions of whether or not to prosecute you, and jurors that may have to decide whether you're guilty or not guilty, than if you are the actual business owner standing at your doorstep warding off a mob. But I don't know that if there's a legal analysis here. I think there's a practical analysis that sort of trumps the legal analysis.
So kind of similar in this regard, on Tuesday afternoon during a press conference, the Kenosha sheriff said that he was asked by a group of people with guns if he could deputize them. Can you even do that legally?
I heard the response, which was, I think he said it would be insane to do that. The liability would be insane. And he's right. The liability would be crazy. So even if, does the law permit that? It might. If it does permit that, it's probably a relic from the 1800s when that type of behavior used to actually be necessary to preserve order in the Wild West of Wisconsin, as it were. But no, I mean, that's not a modern day concept that's going to be happening. And people who are asking for that are, they're watching too many movies.
These events bring together a lot of issues, but also a lot of legalities, a lot of people's rights into question. So how do people's First Amendment rights to protest coincide with or support Second Amendment rights?
Well, those are two very distinct concepts. So the Bill of Rights wasn't, as far as I know, drafted in order of importance. In other words, I don't know that the First Amendment was first because it's more important than the Second Amendment. I haven't heard that argument. I think that, you know, you have the right to protest, but clearly government also has the right to impose reasonable restrictions on time, place, and circumstance to restrict people's First Amendment rights. And so it's widely known that you can restrict people's First Amendment rights when circumstances warrant it, especially when there's violence and there's unruly mobs and things like that. Second Amendment rights, it's a similar concept. You do have a individual right to possess firearms, but of course that right is and has been tailored considerably over the years. And there's millions and millions of Americans who lawfully cannot possess firearms because government has decided, politicians have passed laws that, you know, if you've been convicted of disorderly conduct with your spouse, domestic violence crime, your gun rights are gone forever. You commit a felony, second offense, possession of marijuana in Wisconsin, you just became a felon, you lost your gun rights forever. So government has and can restrict each of those constitutional rights. The interplay between the two, when you see the protests, is really interesting because you do see people who are possessing firearms in the context of demonstrating peacefully. And I think that's why, if you go back to the example I had of just here on North Avenue when I walked a few blocks with this group, that's exactly what I saw. The person possessing the firearm was a peaceful person. Nothing got looted, nothing got burned, no shots were fired. In Wauwatosa, police were literally a few hundred feet down the road. As the protest would move a few feet, the Tulsa police would move a few feet. I mean, so they just kept a distance and they monitored it. And I think their behavior, the police behavior, demonstrated a respect for people's rights to protest coupled with their rights to open carry firearms. I think law enforcement demonstrated considerable restraint, proper behavior, and they allowed those constitutional rights to be exercised, notwithstanding the law violations that eventually occurred.
Right. And obviously, this is an ongoing situation, and we'll see how things develop. But Tony Cotton, thanks for helping us break down some of the basics here.
Thank you.
Tony Cotton is an attorney in Waukesha and the former president of the Wisconsin Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Coming up next, Wauwatosa Mayor Dennis McBride talks about the ongoing protests in the city. Lake Effect Weekend continues on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect Weekend continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Kenosha, Wisconsin has been rocked by protests since last weekend when a black man named Jacob Blake was shot in the back by police. Blake is just the latest victim in a string of police shootings and killings that have galvanized a nationwide movement against police brutality and racial injustice. In the Milwaukee area, protests have been ongoing since this spring, and in nearby Wauwatosa, these protests have focused on an officer named Joseph Menza. Over the past 5 years, Officer Menza has killed 3 people, including 17-year-old Alvin Cole in February. Protesters have called for his firing and arrest, but neither have happened. Menza is currently suspended, and the killing of Cole is still being investigated. Wauwatosa Mayor Dennis McBride had just started his first term on the job when protests erupted in spring. He joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about these protests.
Mayor McBride, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
I appreciate it. Good to be here. I've been on Lake Effect before, but never as mayor, so this is a new experience.
I was about to say, you're a relatively new mayor, so this would be your first time on as mayor. Why were you on before?
I was on 4 times. I was on about pauper graves on the county grounds. I was on talking about historic preservation of the lobby at Wauwatosa's High School and a few other things like that.
Nice. So most of our conversation is going to be about Wauwatosa, but I'd like to start here, actually. I'm sure you've seen what's happening in Kenosha right now, and I'm wondering what you think of what's going on there, especially as we're about to talk about the protests that have been happening in Wauwatosa.
Well, I don't think anybody can watch what's going on in Kenosha and not be sickened by it. The facts haven't been sorted out yet, but it doesn't look good. And just to see another black man shot by police is just troubling. That's all I can say. It's just hard to watch.
Yeah. Of course, there's been a lot of protesting in Wauwatosa over the last few months here. How do you view this movement that you're seeing in your city and this moment that's happening?
Well, the world changed on May 25th when George Floyd was murdered before our eyes. We saw 8 minutes and 46 seconds of a slow death. And that was horrifying as well. The protests in Wauwatosa and across the country started soon thereafter, and it's been almost a daily thing in Wauwatosa. People have a constitutional right to protest, and we support that right. So we have been one of the centers of the protest because we have a police officer who has shot and killed 3 people in the line of duty. He's been cleared 2 of the 3 times, and we're awaiting the district attorney's review of the 3rd shooting. But that fact alone has caused us to be the site of many protests.
The officer you're talking about, Joseph Menza, of course, you mentioned he had killed 2 people before. He then went on to kill yet another person in his job this year. I think it's confusing for a lot of people that someone who had already killed 2 people while on the job had kept their job and then went on to kill yet another person. What is the process for investigating a police shooting in the city of Wauwatosa? And how did that play out for Mensa the previous two times?
This is all dictated by Wisconsin state law. And I just want to preface all this by saying that we've been criticized by some state legislators for what we have or have not done. And I've asked them, if they don't like the laws that we are duty-bound to enforce, to change those laws. And in fact, Governor Evers has called a special session to discuss some of this, finally, after the Kenosha shooting. But the state law requires this. When there's a shooting of by any police officer, some other agency has to investigate. So in the Mensa situations, it's been the Milwaukee Police Department that has conducted the investigation. They do their investigation, they turn over their findings and evidence to the district attorney, and the district attorney makes the final decision as to whether a police officer, in this case Joseph Mensa, should be charged with any crime. And in the two previous situations, he determined that Officer Mensa should not be charged with a crime, that he acted in self-defense, and so it was a justified homicide in each case. He is currently reviewing the third shooting under the same standards, and we'll have to await his findings. But after that, if there's a complaint filed, a charge filed against a police officer, and in this case, citizens have filed a charge against or charges against Officer Mensa, then the Wauwatosa Police and Fire Commission has to make a determination under the Wisconsin statutes as to whether there's just cause for firing the officer. I want to underline several times something that people don't seem to appreciate, which is under that Wisconsin statute, the Wauwatosa Common Council and I as mayor have no control, zero control over the work of the Wauwatosa Police and Fire Commission. The Police and Fire Commission has sole authority under the state statutes to determine whether a police officer or a firefighter should be hired, fired, or disciplined. So I have no control over that process.
Well, and that's a question I had because, of course, the Wauwatosa Common Council voted to remove Mensa from the police. So were they not really allowed to have that vote? Was that something that was more symbolic?
That's another misconception. First of all, they didn't vote to remove Officer Mensa. It was a 14-1 vote, and the next day I signed that resolution. What that resolution said was it was not directed to the Police and Fire Commission. Let me repeat that. It was not directed to the Police and Fire Commission. It was directed to the police chief and to the city administrator, and the wording of it was, we order those two gentlemen to facilitate the transition of Officer Joseph Mensa from his employment by the Wauwatosa Police Department. Now, what that means and what it meant then is that we are looking at alternatives beyond the Police and Fire Commission to see whether we can facilitate a transition of Officer Mensa to some other form of employment. So I'm not at liberty to discuss our internal negotiations or the advice from our city attorney and our outside attorneys, but that is a process completely separate from anything that the Police and Fire Commission is doing.
You know, the inner workings of Wauwatosa, the city of Wauwatosa, have kind of been on display to some extent. There's been a lot of conflict, specifically between the chief of police and your equity and inclusion commission. The chief asked you to remove the chairman, Rob Lowe. You've stated that you simply don't have the authority to do that. I'm curious, what do you see as the purpose of this equity and inclusion committee and how it functions for Wauwatosa?
Well, first of all, I just have to correct it. It was John Lowe, not Rob Lowe. You're confusing him with a movie star. And maybe he believes he is, but Sean will be happy just to be recognized as chair of the Equity and Inclusion Commission. In any event, I told the chief that I have no authority under our local ordinances to remove a chair of a citizen commission that has been appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the council. I supported the creation of the Equity Inclusion Commission before I was mayor. I came to City Hall and supported that. I think it's regrettable that the two sides are sniping at each other. I think more than ever, and this is a message I've been trying to give to everybody from the right wing to the left wing and everybody in the middle, more than ever, given all the stresses and strains that Wauwatosa and everybody in America are facing, we really need to try to get on the same page and put our egos to the side and try to work things out. We really need peace. We need progress. We can't have peace or progress without working together.
Now, I'd like to take a step back to some of the protests that you've been seeing in the city of Wauwatosa. Now, at some point, you instituted a curfew. Is that right?
We had three nights of curfews back in, I think it was early June, because we had people who were attacking Mayfair Mall and driving 90 miles an hour down some of our streets and doing some other things that were causing dangers to people, both residents and non-residents who were involved. So we had to do that.
Yeah, what was the purpose of the curfew, and how is a curfew implemented on the ground in general?
Well, again, that was under the Wisconsin statutes, which gives the mayor emergency powers if needed to protect the health and safety of a community. So it was not a step that I took lightly. It was upon the recommendation of the police, who felt that they couldn't otherwise control the situation. With a couple nights of curfews, we got the situation under control, and fortunately, no one got hurt during that time.
So you felt like it was effective?
Absolutely.
From the outside, it seems like often when a curfew is created, you know, there's the question of it denying people the rights granted to them by the Constitution, but also it seems as though it can actually do the opposite and escalate a peaceful situation, because of course officers are now responsible for enforcing the curfew. We've seen that happen, I think, in cities around the country. Did you see any of that from your viewpoint? Did you see that in Wauwatosa?
No, none whatsoever. It allowed the situation to be calmed down, and we did not see an escalation. I will say that in every one of my public statements, in every one of my private statements, in every one of the city statements, we have supported the right to protest. We recognize the right to protest under the First Amendment of the Constitution. And what the Constitution requires, though, as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court, is that protesters do it peacefully. So as I stated on August 14th in a public statement, We recognize your right to protest. We welcome your protests if they are peaceful. They must be done. If you're going to march, it has to be on a sidewalk or a street, but you cannot block pedestrian or car traffic. That statement came right out of the ACLU website. And then I noted that we were not going to allow people to break the law otherwise, though. So the Constitution, as consistently interpreted by the court, says, please protest peacefully, and if you don't, if you break the law, then you're going to have to suffer those consequences.
Well, and there were questions about the safety of Officer Mensa, of course.
Right.
Right now, I'm not sure how much you can talk about this, but right now, how is he working? Is he still working with the police? Is he just kind of on hold for the moment?
The Police and Fire Commission decided in July that he should be suspended while the PFC considers the citizen complaints against him. Before that, anytime there's a shooting or anything else called a critical incident of that sort, an officer is reassigned to desk duty. This is done not just in Wauwatosa, but I think everywhere. But he's reassigned to desk duty. He was on desk duty. He was not on the streets. But the PFC did decide to suspend him while they consider the complaints against him.
So he is still suspended then?
He's still suspended. And again, The mayor and the common council had no say in that decision. I'm not second guessing the decision one way or the other. I'm just merely pointing out that under the statutes, only the police and fire commission have that authority.
Now, I am curious, although the mayor and the common council don't have authority to fire or hire, are you able to make decisions about internal changes to policy for the police?
Absolutely. What we've been advised by the city attorney's office, and what I know as a lawyer of 40 years, is that if the state statutes say you don't have this authority, the silence means you have authority over everything else. So what that means is we, as the common council and mayor, can set policy for the police department. And in fact, we've already done that. We've already directed the police department to buy body cameras. That process is underway. We have the common council voted to ban chokeholds. That was something the police department didn't do anyway, but we've made it now an ordinance. I signed that. We've taken the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association pledge to greatly increase our hiring of people of color for all city departments, and we've also instituted implicit bias training, not just for the police who are already getting that, but also for elected officials and city staff. So there's a whole raft of things that we're trying to accomplish, and some of those include making more clear what we want to see as policy for our police department. So we do have that authority, and we are exercising that authority.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what happens. Mayor McBride, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you, and anybody can give me a call. I'm happy to talk to anybody about this, and I look forward to talking with you again. Thank you for the opportunity.
Dennis McBride is the mayor of Wauwatosa. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. We'll take one last break and then hear some music from Milwaukee musician Andy in our Pandemic Performer Series. Lake Effect Weekend continues on WUWM. Lake Effect Weekend continues now on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. In normal times, Lake Effect features a variety of in-studio performances from local musicians and artists. But of course, these are not normal times, and many artists have been struggling during the pandemic. Most live events have been canceled, and recording music in isolation presents a lot of challenges, which is why we've been featuring these artists in a series we call Pandemic Performers. Milwaukee-based musician Andy Heath has used this time as a way to reconnect with our community through volunteering, while working on some future projects as well. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about her work and share some of her music.
So when you first heard about the pandemic, what was your initial reaction as somebody who is a working musician?
It started... I think probably for everybody, kind of slow, the realization of how much things were going to change. And the last show that I actually played was Friday, March 13th. And I kind of was watching as other areas around the country were taking it seriously and shutting things down, and knew pretty immediately that it was on its way here. So I tried to look at it practically and less emotionally, just because we're talking about health and safety, you know. But it was definitely a bummer to watch. I mean, pretty much the entire summer, all of the shows that we had scheduled just kind of dry up.
Yeah, you released an album not too long ago. What did you expected this summer to look like?
That had kind of been a big part of it, too. I'm a part of a couple different projects, but one of them is obviously my solo project. And I had just assembled a backing band for it when I released it last August. And I had put together a really, really great band. And I was really hoping to be able to tour with this summer because, you know, the work would have been out for several months at this point, and people would hopefully have been receptive to it and then come to live shows. So yeah, those expectations were pretty pretty dashed for sure.
Yeah, it seems like this was the summer to, you know, really promote the album in a lot of ways. Have you been working on music during this pandemic?
Yeah, I have been working on my next project, which is called What Have I Done? So the last project from last year was What I'm Good At. Maybe there's a what trend, I don't know. But I have started that. Material has been kind of written for a while. Some of it's new and some of it's old. And yeah, I've started on the first song for that. So there's definitely hope ahead for sure.
You also mentioned that you've been spending a bit of time away from music during the pandemic, probably in part because it is a little difficult, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think obviously for pretty much all musicians, because it's such an expressive medium and art form, there's a part of it that feeds our soul. But it is ultimately, for a lot of us, something that we want to make a career. And so I think it was definitely discouraging to just kind of know, yeah, this is on hold for a little bit. So I decided to look at it more as a time to write and to connect with music personally, but not so much trying to continue to promote things, you know, social media wise. I haven't been super active, and I've been more trying to get involved out in the community directly through gardening and urban farming.
How has that been going?
It's been really, I think, encouraging to sort of see this situation of this virus and how discouraging it is kind of get turned on its head a little bit. Being outdoors is something, you know, especially when you're social distancing, something that is so safe. And so I think being able to still connect with people outdoors, it has been really encouraging. But yeah, I volunteer a bunch of my time to a great organization called People Power Produce. And that's an urban farm out on 6th and Howard. And yeah, essentially the mission this year has been to actually just donate everything that we grow and kind of take a look into 2021 as that sort of being the year that we maybe try to first produce revenue. But this year we've just actually been donating everything to local restaurants and food pantries. And it's just been awesome to connect with people in that way outside of a performative kind of experience.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like in some ways this does seem to segue into What I'm Good At, because it seems like you've found during this pandemic something that you're good at.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it ties into, I think, just to the spirit of that song, which is that, like, I can be a musician and perform and be really good at that. But if I don't have love for people, then that's the real kicker, you know? And so I think to be able to kind of find this new thing that I am good at, but also sort of definitely still be able to provide love for my community is, yeah, it's definitely, I keep using the word encouraging, but that's really what it is.
So let's take a listen to that song, What I'm Good At.
You took the first steps, but I drew my gun first. Your eager eyes don't lie, bullet lips and endless thirst. He said, I could be good at loving you.
is What I'm Good At by Andy. So you have this song, Spoon-Fed Women. Tell me a bit about this song.
Yeah, this song, I wrote it several years after it's kind of the material that inspired it. And really, to me, what it became about is being self-sufficient and being someone who is discerning of things. You know, I think when we're younger, it's a lot easier for us to sort of just to trust the people that are in our lives. And there are definitely trustworthy people that take part in our lives. But I think as we get older, we obviously learn to be a little bit more self-sufficient, hopefully, and more discerning of information that is given to us. So this was just kind of born out of a time in my life where I was in kind of a, you know, codependent relationship with someone and not very self-sufficient in my thought processes or my ideas, and being able to take a look at it several years later and kind of understand the place that I had been in gave me kind of the fuel to write this song.
Here it is, Spoon-Fed Women.
Spoon-fed, spoon-fed women. Spoon-fed, spoon-fed women. You like them spoon-fed women. Take them out to dinner. Show off all your tattoos. Explain all their meanings, yeah. Spoon-fed, spoon-fed women. Cause you know the weaker that they are, the deeper that they scar. You love to love them with your poetry, then walk away. You always told me that the timing wasn't right, that in a couple more years we could try this fight. Let me make it clear.
That was Spoon-Fed Women by Andy. So you wanted to share some music with us. I like the title of this song, An Angry Woman. It feels especially timely, considering the moment we're living in. Tell me a bit about it.
Yeah, So I wrote this song just a couple years ago. It was at a time in my life where I always like to say I just become kind of like a crusty person. I was just not a very nice, you know. I think I had some stuff going on in my life that sort of made me just a prickly person to be around. And people that were closest to me were kind of telling me over time, like, hey, you should maybe work on that. It kind of all came to a head, and I had realized that I needed to sort of address wherever this inner frustration and inner anger was coming from. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I have done that. But I, you know, at the time when I was kind of coming to those aha sort of eureka moments, I wrote this song just about how hard it is to love someone that's angry all the time. I think anger has an extremely constructive place in society, for sure, at times. You know, I think it fuels a lot of needed change. But interpersonally, anger is hardly ever, you know, the answer. And I just kind of wanted to write a reflective song that explained what it's like to be in the middle of a transformative experience where you're kind of in the muck, and you know you're in the muck, and you're trying to get out, and how does that feel, and what does it sound like?
Yeah. Well, here it is, An Angry Woman.
Tell me, what am I supposed to do when I'm conquered by the thought of you, but you won't read.
Andy Heath is a Milwaukee-based musician, and she spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers as a part of our Pandemic Performers series. And that wraps up the show for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for making us a part of your afternoon. Lake Effect Weekend airs every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
I've been searching for the peace I like, 'cause an angry trying to put into words the way my thoughts are most like birds that can't be caught. And as each one escapes my head, they start to pluck apart the threads, and I